On episode 404 of the 40 Plus Fitness podcast, we meet Moira Berman and discuss some of the differences and similarities in weight training for men and women. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/404. Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go. Our guest today at the age of 35 didn't like how her body was changing and decided to do something about it by lifting weights. Today, we're going to discuss lifting weights, some of the differences and some of the similarities between men and women. But stick around until the end because Moira is going to offer something pretty special, a free summit. And I don't think you're going to want to miss this. So hang out till the end. Listen to Moira and I discuss weightlifting for men and women. With no further ado, here's Moira Berman. Moira, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you so much, Ellen. This is really exciting to be on your show.
Thank you. And I was very proud when you invited me to be a part of your summit, the Fit Beyond 50. Really enjoyed our interview. And so I know if you like the podcast and you like today's show and it resonates with you, you're definitely going to like that conversation with Moira and I because it was a really good interview and I really enjoyed it. So thank you for letting me be a part of the summit.
Oh, sure. And I think the best part was maybe when you knocked over the mic.
Yeah, I got a little excited with my hands. And the summit is video. So, you know, this is an audio podcast. So you don't see me moving my arms around and, you know, just doing all the things that I do while I'm articulating and talking. But yeah, I had my computer propped up so I had good angle and better lighting in my in the house we have here in the jungle. And boom, knocked the computer over. It was a moment.
It was pretty good though.
Okay. Yes. So one of the things I like about your story that I really wanted to kind of get into is that, like a lot of folks, you knew that eating well was something that you needed to do to kind of maintain your weight. So you would go on a diet, lose a little bit of weight, put on a little bit of weight. And finally, you kind of heard someone, or it kind of resonated with you at least a little bit better, that maybe weightlifting, resistance training was something you needed to do.
Yes, I had, as I said, been dieting. You know, you sort of do the yo-yo. I was doing running. I took exercise classes. But someone said to me, you know, if you used weights, it would change your body shape. And that was all I had to hear. Body shape will change. Okay, I'm in. So that's how I got started, but I didn't really know what I was doing. I had a friend show me how to use the weights in one of the small YMCA gyms that was near us. And then when I got hooked on that, because it seemed like fun, I was able to push a little bit more and more weight, and I thought I was just really terrific. So I joined a gym. And there weren't many gyms. There were women's gyms that were purely women, and they had a few machines or some aerobics. And there were men's gyms. You know, this was going back a while. But one enterprising gym owner had opened up a women's gym above his men's gym because the men wouldn't let us work out with them, obviously. They were hardcore. So we had our own gym above theirs. And but we had access to the men who, you know, would show us things, and they had some trainers who would show us. So that was really the start. Okay. And it absolutely did, as I went forward, because I was hooked, it did change the way my body looked. So I was really happy.
Yeah, it is hard to explain to somebody that once you start lifting and you start getting stronger, and you kind of get that rush of the pump of moving weight and feeling it is something much like running, much like most other exercise programs, it's easy to get addicted to.
It really is. And I was I was definitely addicted to it, that I moved forward and got so involved that I did a contest. Luckily, I was so naive, I had no idea what I was really doing and what I was in for, that I just followed the directions of some of the guys in the gym and just went for it, lost some weight, put on a little bit of muscle and entered. So cool. I think that's probably the best way to do these things, when you don't know too much.
Yeah, because there's less opportunity for you to overthink it.
That's right, or find stumbling blocks. Because, you know, once you have a lot of information, then your mind starts telling you, oh, but you can't do this. Oh, but you don't compare with the others. Oh, you know, oh, but. But I just thought, I'm going to get, you know, 90 seconds on stage. Wow, that's more than I'm going to get for anything else. So,
now,
I'm going for it.
You did talk about something, and I want to kind of get into this, because this is one of the major objections. I'll have a conversation with a woman, and invariably she'll tell me, well, you know, I don't want to get huge. I don't want to get bulky. If I lift weights, my legs are going to get just bigger, and I don't need them to get bigger. I want them to get smaller. So when you talk about changing body shape, you're not talking about turning into a man.
Oh, no, definitely. When I was talking about body shape, for me, it was losing kind of what I thought was excess fat on my thighs, my legs, toning my arms. You know, that's what I thought about body changing. It was clear to me from an early age, for some reason, that women had a lot more trouble building muscle. And this is borne out. We don't build muscle as readily as men. And when you do see bulking of sorts, usually it's a little bit of muscle that's developing, and women are still carrying the fat over the muscle. But once you lose that fat, you get these long, lean muscles. So it's hard to bulk up with a lot of muscle for women, unless you really go out and try. You know, your genetics are right. You might get some help with some pharmaceuticals.
that's where I wanted you to go with this, because I think that's what there's two real huge misconceptions. When they look in the magazines or they see one of these huge muscular girls that's a bodybuilder, there's two things that woman's doing that you're not going to do. One is she's going to take steroids, and a lot of times you can see it in their face because their face structure changes. The other thing that you'll often see is the fact that they're in the gym 6 hours a day and sleeping the rest of the time, because they're professional bodybuilders. That's their job, is to lift weights and exercise and get big. So they're in the gym. If they're not lifting, they're working on their posing. If they're not working on their posing, they're working on their tan, and they're trying to cut the body fat down to just this really unreasonable number that you can't sustain for a long period of time. And so they're doing these things that you wouldn't do. You just wouldn't spend the time to do this because it's not your priority of your life. If you're looking to get healthy, you do need to do resistance training, because you are losing muscle mass and you're losing bone density pretty much every day.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, I heard those same stories when I was bodybuilding. You know, I was influencing friends, or they were asking me. And invariably, the questions came about, aren't you worried about getting too big? And my answer was, I wish, you know, if I could get some more muscle, that would be absolutely wonderful, because it does take, and I was already 35, 36. So I had age against me in terms of really getting a lot of muscle. So yeah, we don't, as women, unless you get some outside assistance, like pharmaceuticals, as we said, you know.
Yeah.
Steroids. And it's really important to, and what I found then was, okay, now I've been doing the bodybuilding. I'm not competing anymore, but I still need to maintain working out with weights. And then the motivation was because I realized that it was going to help keep my bones strong, just keep my muscles from atrophying, you know,
yes.
Keep my muscles strong, keep me healthy. I'm going to look more vibrant, and just the hormones that you release from your lifting weights, especially if you work out, you know, reasonably hard, the hormones you're going to release are going to just have a bearing on keeping you younger. So it's definitely important.
Because heavy lifting, and this is something, you know, women do have testosterone. They don't have as much as men. That's why they can't get as muscular as men. Unless they use steroids, then anything's possible. But lifting heavy weights helps men and women release a little bit more testosterone. And a little bit more testosterone is just kind of one of those chemicals in our bodies that just make us feel a lot better, look a lot better, and our muscle tone and quality of our movement is just better.
That's right. And I learned recently that women actually produce more HGH, you know, the growth hormone, when they work out than men do. Men produce more testosterone, but women produce more of the HGH, which is the hormone to keep us younger. So we've got an advantage when we work out. We may not get the testosterone, but we're going to look younger.
Cool. Now, you said something, and I think this has changed quite a bit, but I do want to talk about this because I've had lots of clients and lots of people I've talked to over the years. And it's, you walk into the gym and most gyms, okay, you see the treadmills, and then after the treadmills, then they have some of the machines. And then after the machines, over in that little corner over there, and sometimes a whole section of the gym, now you see all the free weights. And yes, the big guys are back there lifting, probably grunting and doing their thing. And there's now whole series of chains and whatnot that are trying to get away from that, so people feel less intimidated about the gym. Back, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, it was all guys in the gym for the most part. Then they started coming out with women's gyms. And most of those were, like you said, not so much designed for muscle building, resistance training, strength training, those types of things. But things have changed a lot. You know, the advent of CrossFit, other things. People, we're more used to having women come back into the free weight section and lift heavy. We're seeing it more and more. So it's not as different or, you know, I guess unusual as it was unusual 30, 40, 50 years ago.
That's so true. I think there's still an intimidation factor for someone going in for the first time, but it's not the same as it was. It isn't just because there are men there. I think it's because they're seeing all these fit people. And as you said, CrossFit, that could be intimidating for anyone walking into that kind of place.
Oh, you know, I agree. Yeah.
Yes.
I think the, you know, but what I mean by this is, and this is right. This is the point. Okay. Yeah. You see this big hunky guy, you know, he's lifting heavy weights. He's grunting. He's there with maybe two or three of his buddies. You know, they're doing their thing. And I can tell you straight away, they're not interested in you. They're happy you're there because you're helping to support their gym. You know, their gym membership, if it was just the three of them paying for this gym, it'd be a lot more expensive. The fact that there's 200 people that have signed up for the gym means the gym membership's affordable for everybody. They're not having to buy their own equipment and they can come work out. They're happy to see you in the gym. They're happy to see you do things for your health. They're not staring you down. They're not watching you. And I'll tell you just from my experience, only time I notice anyone in the gym is when they're doing something that could hurt themselves. But I reserve and I stay back. Now I own a gym. So if I were to see someone doing something I thought could hurt them, I'm going to step up and say something. But those individuals are there for a particular purpose. They didn't get big and strong by sitting around watching other people or playing on their phone. They come in the gym, they do their workout. Yes, they may have longer rests because they're lifting heavier weights, but they're not really there to watch you. They're there to get their workout done, and you're just as welcome to that equipment, just as welcome to being in the gym as anyone.
That's true. In fact, I was kind of going to head there that we were intimidated at one time by seeing those men in the gym. I think that most people are less intimidated, especially if as you say, you just realize that they are only too happy that you are joining so that they don't have to pay the full cost of keeping a gym open. But I think that there are some of us, just as people, we're intimidated going into a new situation.
Yeah.
And I think for women in particular, if it is the first time, I'd suggest that you go with a friend to a gym and especially if you're going into one of the chains, they're immediately going to offer to show you around because they don't want you doing something that might hurt yourself. And they'll offer you 1 or 2 days maybe of some free advice, free training, just to get you going. And so that's really good. It is good to, if you are going into a gym for the first time, to get a trainer, to get someone to show you how to use the equipment, to find out what you should be doing for your body. You know, the kind of work that you do, Alan, is just perfect because you actually analyze what the person needs and then give them a program. So anyone who got that advice from you would feel quite comfortable going into a gym.
And you've hit on something that's really important there. You know, the gym thrives on people not hurting themselves, for them, you know, coming in there and continuing their membership, and for them to get stronger and show improvement. And they're going to probably, when you get in there, they're going to probably ask you, particularly if it's a big box, you know, franchise style gym.
Yes.
They're going to introduce you to their staff. They're going to introduce you to the gym. They're going to, you know, probably do some general assessment work with you. And that may or may not be free, but they're going to make sure that you have an opportunity to start and access to support, a trainer to help you do that. Now, most gyms will also do this. They will have their personal trainers walking the floor when they're not training someone. And it's their job to help you if you have a question. Now, they're not going to train you for free, but if you walk up and you say, look, I want to move from the barbell over here for the bench press, or want to move away from this press machine, and I want to do the same exercise with free weights, with the dumbbells, could you show me how to do this properly? And they will be glad to do so. So if you feel uncomfortable, ask a trainer that's there. Ask the person at the desk if someone can come show you how to do an exercise properly, because that's very, very important that you not hurt yourself, particularly when we're over 40, over 50. Those injuries don't heal nearly as quickly as they did when we were in our 20s.
That's right. You know, things have changed a little bit. I worked in a gym at the time that I was training after I had completed the competitions, the gym kind of offered me a free membership if I would work in the gym, you know, a couple of days a week or a few hours a day. So I would be one of those trainers. I would train people if we had a meeting set up, or my job was to walk around the gym. I find it much less so today that they actually walk around helping people. They usually are back at their stations looking at, you know, who else is signing up. So that is a shame. I just have to mention. Now, that isn't every gym. Every, you know, all gyms are different. But no one should feel intimidated to go up and find a trainer or find one, you know, one of the staff and ask them to help you with something, even if they're not walking the floor, because that's what they are really there for. And they will, you're right, they will be absolutely helpful once you ask them, because they don't want anyone to be hurting themselves. So don't feel shy about walking up to someone who happens to be sitting at one of the desks and ask them for advice, you know, ask them to show you how maybe there's a machine that you don't know, that you haven't used before. Ask them to show you how it works.
Yeah.
That's good advice.
It is. It's just, it's funny, you know, because to me, that's part of the lifeblood of any gym, is their willingness to help people without having to make an extra buck, you know, on the side. You know, with the gym now, one of the things that I've done at my gym is I actually will throw free weightlifting clinics for beginners. And I'm like, okay, come in on a Saturday. I'll come in for an hour. I'll show you how to use all of the equipment in the gym, absolutely free. And you'll leave here with a workout program, a basic workout program to get you started. And so, you know, I did one of those and it went over pretty good. The people that came really enjoyed it. I'm going to host another one here soon at the gym. But I also do the online training. So, you know, there are other options out there. If the gym is not supporting you by, you know, having the support there with people walking around, or, you know, you're able to afford to have personal training sessions, because if you're having them all the time, which is actually really good for accountability, for doing the exercises properly, and just, you know, somebody that's going to be there to kind of push you a little bit harder. If they're not doing that, you know, give me a call. I'll be glad to help you out.
Yes, that's true. And I agree with you that having a trainer, particularly when you're starting out, is absolutely worth the money, because you want to learn how to do things properly. You want to get a program and you want that accountability. And then when you feel comfortable to work out on your own, that you're motivated to go into the gym without having to, you know, show up for an appointment, then it's great. You've got your program and you can continue. I think I once wrote an article in a blog going back a while, so it's probably out of date, was how to hire a trainer.
I've actually done an episode on what to look for in a trainer and when to fire a trainer. A trainer should be listening more than they're talking. A trainer should be paying attention to what's going on with you. I have some clients, they're not always happy with what I tell them to do. Sometimes I'm actually asking them to do more, and there's times I'm actually asking them to do less. And they don't always understand the do less part. But it's when I see a client can't handle the exercise they're doing, or the form's just not right there, I'm not going to put load on them. That's what a lot of people forget. It's like, well, I can lift more weight. And I'm like, not the way you're doing it. You're going to break, and I don't want to break you. You and I have something very, very in common. We both tore our rotator cuffs.
Yes, we did. I think we empathize with each other.
but we took different routes.
We approached
it very differently. I went through the surgery. And when the doctor got in there, he was like, this was a bad one. But I went through the surgery, went through the therapy, and I'm in pretty good shape. All things considered, I lost a lot of strength as a result. I have a little divot in my shoulder as a result. But, you know, I have full range of motion with my shoulder, and I'm able to do most of the things I was able to do, just not quite as strong. But that was my path. You chose a different path.
Yes. I think when I tore mine, I was a little older than you were when you tore yours. We won't go into details, but the doctor I went to looked at me he spoke to me very honestly, and he said that I had an 80% chance of recovery. And I know that you said that would have been a plus for you. For me, that was a minus. And I was very fortunate that I found a functional rehab trainer online, actually. He lives in Australia, but he's been marvelous for me, because he said to me, he looks at the MRI slides and said, I can help you get your full strength back in a different way and not have this pain and not have the surgery. So it wasn't that he said, if you decide to have the surgery, I'll help you recover. But he said, I would recommend that you don't. So I decided to trust him. And I'm very pleased that I did, because I do. I have full range of motion. I have a lot of the strength back. I won't say it's exactly the same as it was, but I just am using the muscles differently and using different muscles to compensate. And I don't even notice it anymore, because I've trained my brain, I guess, to just do things in a different way. So we chose different paths, but we both had success, which just, I think, shows there's no one way. And I think whatever you believe is going to work for you is the thing that's going to work.
As long as you're willing to dedicate the time and the effort to do what's necessary. So the one thing we did have in common was I was in therapy, physical therapy. I had the surgery on Thursday. I was in physical therapy Monday. And you listened to your therapist and you did exactly as he instructed you to do. And you built compensating muscles to allow you to move and do the things you needed to do. So we chose different paths for different reasons and different ways that we look at things. So I agree with you. There's you have to look at this and say, but the injury is not a give up. The injury is actually a flag for me, do more. But do it differently, or do something different to fix this, to solve this, to work around this. But so many people will injure themselves and decide, okay, this hurts, therefore I'm going to stop.
Exactly. It's so tempting to do that. I have to say that I have a functional trainer that, regardless of what I say I've hurt, he will give me an exercise to fix it so that I don't slow down. It's just amazing. Okay, I can't go running, you know. No, you can. Just use your leg this way, not that way. You know, he said he does not believe in stopping for a second. And if you have someone that you trust like that, and if you're the kind of person, as you said, who is motivated to continue around, over, or through what might be a challenge, then you definitely come out stronger and better on the other side.
Yeah, I have a client, and he right now, I mean, he's done so good. He works so hard, and he's addicted to it, for lack of a better word. He's having issues with his elbow. So when we do any kind of pull movement, we have to be very careful with his elbow. And he has now some arthritis in his shoulder. And so when we're doing push movements, particularly overhead, we have to be very careful about those push movements. And he's making some decisions on how he wants to deal, or if he wants to deal with those medically, but there is pain involved. So we're trying to modify the movements. We're trying to do all of those things, like you said, functionally allow him to do the things, because I told him, I said, you know, if it's an itis, you know, basically a tendonitis in the elbow, rest is the primary prescription. But we've tried 3 weeks of rest, and the pain comes back. So it's like, you know, this is something more than just what rest might do. He still wants to pull. So I'm like, okay, let's talk about where the pain starts, where it finishes. Let's figure out ways to modify the work so that you're still able to build muscle and build strength without putting yourself in a compromised or painful position. And he's working with me. We're diligently going through that process, and it is a process, and it means he's having to actually work harder to get past this. And I'm so proud of him for doing it, because a lot of folks would sit there and say, I don't like the pain and I'm quitting. But the pain is actually probably a signal that you need to change something, and you probably need to work a little harder to make sure you're doing the right things.
That's actually fascinating, because usually we're working with clients who are putting up their own blocks, you know, missing a session, going off exercise for a while, giving up. But you also have to be careful of clients who are the opposite, who maybe want to push too hard, push through the pain, and you have to slow them down just slightly.
Just slightly, yeah.
Just slightly.
You know, yeah, because when he told me, he's like, you know, I had to do a back workout. I'm like, okay, well, let's talk about how you did it, what you felt, and then we get into the actual exercises. And I'm like, okay, let's change this exercise and do this way. Let's change that exercise and do it that way. And then let me know, report back how that felt. And so each week we get on our calls, and, you know, we're going through this stuff. And yeah, then I've got other clients that, you know, if something goes wrong in their day, they're going to completely just miss a workout, miss, you know, scheduling a call with me, something like that. And I'm like, you know, okay, no. So I have both sides. You're right. I do have clients that require both. And it's, you know, I understand both. I've been in that situation where, you know, you can't work out and you really want to, or just a time when you feel a lot of something going on, or DOMS or something like that, and I really don't want to waddle into the gym today.
That's right. I actually found that happening after I'd been competing, that I was kind of burned out. I would drive to the gym because it was habit. You know, the car just went there.
Yeah.
And I would sit outside, and I remember there were one or two times when I never actually went in. I just thought, no, I'm going home. It was very strange. It was a very strange thing. That's why I remember it so clearly, because I just couldn't get myself to go in. So I do understand people who, you know.
And I've actually had that happen myself. You know, I was working a very stressful job at a very stressful point in time at that job. And I, just like you did, I remember the alarm going off in the morning. This is back when I actually used alarm clocks. And the alarm went off in the morning for me to go to the gym. And I hit the alarm, and I was thinking to myself, I'm either going to the gym or I'm going to work. Because I can't do both.
Yes.
You know? And it was just that understanding that working out is a stressor. If you're already chronically stressed, you know, sometimes the workout, you do better to spend that 45 minutes meditating or soaking in an Epsom salt bath or something that's going to de-stress you than actually getting in the gym and pushing yourself really hard. So I think there is an aspect where you do listen to your body, but don't let that body just eventually talk you into, let's drop by Dunkin' Donuts and, and do those types of things. It's more of a conversation of saying, okay, I understand, very stressful week. I'm fatigued. I'm not sleeping well. I would do better with an extra hour of sleep than I would by spending that hour in the gym, and give yourself that permission.
Right. Exactly. As long as it doesn't become the habit, It's a very good thing to do. I know you probably have this too. I have friends who will not miss a day, and I keep saying to them, you don't understand that rest is actually good for building muscle, and rest is good for the rest of your workout. And you can miss a day, but their habit is to go in every single day, and it's almost like an addiction.
I just tell them this: professional athletes have deload periods. A bodybuilder will work hard for 8 weeks, and then they'll take a deload week where they don't lift. The other thing they're doing that a lot of us are not doing is most professional athletes will sleep for 8 or 9 hours every single night. And that's because they understand the value of recovery. So you need those deload weeks. Professional athletes, like the football players, I can tell you, as soon as they finish their football season, they take 3 or 4 weeks off. And unless they need to go in for some form of surgery to rehabilitate for the next season, they just take and act like normal people for 3 weeks, and they don't go to the gym, and they don't exercise, and they don't train. And then they let their body recover. And that recovery, they go to the gym hungry because they didn't feed that desire to that work, that thing for 3 weeks. And when they went back in the gym, it was, they were ready to go. But you need that. You need that recovery time.
Absolutely. I'm glad we mentioned that, because we are discussing here how to encourage people to get into the gym. But we also say everything in moderation, especially when you start out.
Oh, yeah. The way I like to put it, I put it in the book, is what you need is gentle nudging. Your body will change. You just have to give it these gentle nudges, the progression to make that happen.
That sounds like a good description. Very good description. I like the gentle nudging. It sounds so much better than get in there and push.
Well, there's a little bit of pushing involved too. You want to find that line. And a lot of people, you'll hear this term when we talk about resistance training, of failure, pushing yourself to failure. You don't have to get to failure for your muscles to grow. You just need an adequate stimulus. Now, failure is is typically a good indication that you definitely have that stimulus. DOMS can be an indicator that you have affected that stimulus, but they should not be the objective. The objective should be where the muscle was worked. It was worked through the full range of motion, and you can feel that you worked it. Now, you may wake up the next morning and feel just as capable to go in and do that workout again. Most cases, probably not, but as long as you're giving your body that stimulus, and then you're giving it the food and the nutrition it needs, and then you're giving it the rest, then you're giving full cycle for your body to grow and to get better.
That's exactly. It's that full cycle. Yes. And I like what you said about the sleep, because when I was seriously into it during the competition, I would be in bed by about 9 o'clock every night, getting up at, 5 or 6 to go train. But nothing stopped me from going to bed and getting the full, 8 to 10 hours sleep. I won't say I got 10, but definitely 8 or 9.
Yeah. I still do that. I still
do still?
8:30. I'm in bed at 8:30, 9 o'clock almost every single night. I have not used an alarm clock in 4 years, unless I have to catch an early morning flight and I just don't want to make that extra sleep cycle happen. I sleep until I know my body's gotten at least 5 sleep cycles, which is 7.5 hours. And occasionally my body will want a 6th one, which will put me up to about 9 hours. But I just let my body sleep until I wake up and say, okay, I'm good to go. And where I am here in Panama is actually really nice because the days and the nights are relatively the same.
Same, right.
And it gets dark around 7 o'clock. So by 8:30, it's been dark for a little while. I'm able to just go ahead and go to sleep very easily. And then it gets light around 5:30. So, right now, pretty much just that twilight morning stuff, it's I can see it coming through the window. That's usually my spur to get up. And if I feel it, I do. If not, I'll go back to sleep and sleep for about another hour and a half, a good sleep cycle. And then I'm up really good at 7 o'clock. So I know every morning I'm going to be up by 7 o'clock for sure. And I plan to start my days usually at 9 o'clock. So, no problem. I have time to shower and do all the things I want to do, but I don't use alarm clocks, and I try to keep my evening activities to a minimum.
I think that's excellent. I think I got into, working full-time in corporate field.
Yeah.
I got into some bad habits of working late. It was almost expected, really. You just had things you did at night. And so I'm slowly getting back into the longer sleep cycles and switching earlier nights and then earlier mornings.
Yeah, I guess I just got, when I got towards the end of my corporate, I was like, I've worked my way up to this point. I deserve to rest when I want to rest. And so I would sit down, I'd pull up my phone and I would check email at about 7 o'clock at night. And after I checked that email at 7 o'clock, I'd set my phone in the living room and I'd go to the bedroom and go to sleep. I don't even have the cell phone in my bedroom. And so I out of sight, out of mind, I'd go to sleep. When I woke up, like I said, 5:30 in the morning, I would go in there and check my work email because I figure if they stayed up till 11 o'clock working and they sent that email and went to bed, they'd wake up in the morning and my email response would be there. And I didn't have to be up at 12 o'clock to answer that email if I answered it at 5 o'clock in the morning. So I had my own system.
Good habit. Yes.
It was, but still stress was a big problem for me and it caused me some issues. And so I'm still working on that whole thing, but I just say, listen to your body, give it the rest it needs, push it a little bit. It'll grow and it'll get better. And it's just the patience and persistence of keeping at it.
Definitely. It's a keeping at it. That's it. Now, to be consistent. Yeah.
I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
And of course, this would be personal. Everyone has a different approach. So here's what I thought about this for quite a while, actually. And I decided one is to do something active every day, whether it's going to the gym, taking a long walk, going for a jog, taking a hike, but do something active every day. Have a morning routine. And I've really gotten into my morning routine, which includes some meditation, some deep breathing, perhaps a 10-minute yoga or some exercise just for 10 minutes, just something to wake me up. And then some abs. I always do some abs in the morning. Just fine. Just do it then. So that's my morning routine, and that seems to be good for what I do. And I think whatever you choose to do, your morning routine should be consistent because it sets you up for the day. And then the third thing would be to connect with friends as often as you can, because that's really one of the things that gives us the internal hormone boost that keeps us happy, content, and feeling connected.
And I really like those. Thank you for that. So Moira, if someone wanted to learn more about you, learn more about the Fit Beyond 50, you haven't set up the website yet. So I'm gonna tell them the link actually. So I'm gonna break in and say, okay, you can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/fit50. Again, that's 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/fit50. And that's gonna take you to the sign up page for the Fit Beyond 50 Summit. But Moira, if there's any other addresses or anything else that you want them to know about, feel free to let us know.
No, I think that's great. I think definitely email, signing up there is the best strategy because they could email either you or me, but I have a feeling that just signing up there is going to be the easiest. And the summit is going to air on the 28th of October. I have a variety of speakers, including our special speaker, Alan Meisner.
Yeah, and I don't know if you cut it out. You probably said, you said you might be cutting it out, but yeah, I did knock over my computer while we were talking. So it was a very fun conversation, much like this one was. So Moira, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you so much for having me as a guest. I really enjoyed the conversation.
I hope you enjoyed today's show, and I do hope that you go and check out Moira's Summit. I was an interviewee on that, as you heard in the interview here. So I think you're going to enjoy it. It's video. Had a lot of fun. Actually knocked my computer over, which you probably also heard. But hey, it was a lot of fun. I think you're going to enjoy it. She's got some great guests coming on there. So do check it out. The links are in the show notes at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/404. Now, before you get out of here, though, again, I'm packing up. I'm headed up to Ohio this week. And if you could go ahead and get your last minute vote in, we're a finalist for the Author Academy Awards. So go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/finalist. Go to page 7 of 16, which is the health category, and vote for the wellness roadmap. Again, that's 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/finalist. Thank you. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Dr. Dennis Wilson and discuss his book, Faster Size, a doctor's revolutionary program to get fit in just minutes a day. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.